Sarva Indriya Gunadra Stray. Unto the seer of all objectives, pursued by the senses. Sarva Prajaya Hetave, who is the solution to all doubts, without whose help one cannot solve all doubts and inabilities. Asatā, with the manifestation of unreality or illusion. Jaya, because of the resemblance. Uptaya, called. Sat, of reality. Avasaya, unto the reflection. Te, unto you. Namaha, I offer my respectful obeisances. Translation. My Lord, you are the observer of all the objectives of the senses. Without your mercy, there is no possibility of solving the problem of doubts. The material world is just like a shadow resembling you. Indeed, one accepts this material world as real because it gives a glimpse of your existence. You repeat, my Lord, you're the observer of all the objectives of the senses. Without your mercy, there's no possibility of solving the problem of doubt. The material world is just like a shadow resembling you. Indeed, one accepts this material world as real because it gives a glimpse of your existence. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda Ki Jai. To paraphrase this verse, the objectives of sensual activities are actually observed by you. Without your direction, the living entity cannot take even a step forward, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, the 15th chapter, text 15. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matak smritir jnanam apohanam cha. You are situated in everyone's heart, and only from you come remembrance and forgetfulness. Chayeva yasya bhuvanani vivarti durga. The living entity under the clutches of Maya wants to enjoy this material world, but unless you give him directions and remind him, he cannot make progress in pursuing his shadowy objective in life. The conditioned soul wrongly progresses toward the wrong objective, life after life, and is reminded of that objective by you. In one life, the conditioned soul desires to progress toward a certain objective, but after his body changes, he forgets everything. Nonetheless, my Lord, because he wanted to enjoy something of this world, you reminded him of this in his next birth. Matak smritir jnanam apohanam cha. Because the conditioned soul wants to forget you, by your grace, you give him opportunities life after life by which he can almost perpetually forget you. Therefore, you are eternally the director of the conditioned souls. It is because you are the original cause of everything that everything appears real. The ultimate reality is your lordship, the supreme personality of Godhead. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. The word Sarva Pratyaya Hetave is explained by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, who says that a result gives one a glimpse of its cause. For example, since an earthen pot is the result of the activities or the actions of a potter, by seeing the earthen pot, one can guess at the existence of the potter. Similarly, this material world resembles the spiritual world, and any intelligent person can guess how it is acting. As explained in Bhagavad Gita, Maya Dyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharachara. The activities of the material world suggest that behind them is the superintendence of the Lord. So Sarvendriya Gunatrashtray Sarva Pachaya Hetave Asatachaya Yogtaya Sadabhasayate Namaha Soma Ganatimanadasha Gananjana Shvakaya Chakshuru Minitam Gena Tismai Shri Gurave Namaha. So implicit within this verse is the natural proof of the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the natural proof for the existence of the Supreme Personality of God, of course, is this material world. And there's many proofs like that. I mean, of course, there's that typical story that Prabhupada told about Sir Isaac Newton, who had constructed a model of the solar system in which the planets were, at least what he knew of the solar system at that time, because he didn't know of all the planets. And of course, recently Pluto has been demoted from being a planet. So anyway, so he constructed a model, and I guess it was a working model where things went around each other in a certain way. And his friend looked at the model. His friend, who happened to be an atheist. Atheist means someone who doesn't believe in God. So his friend looked at the model, and his friend said, "Who has made this?" And Sir Isaac Newton said, "No one." And the friend got really angry. And Sir Isaac Newton basically said to him, "If you think someone has constructed this, then how can you not think that someone has constructed the universe, which is actually far more complex? I mean, just like a model of the solar system. It's quite complex. I mean, all these different inter, I guess it was with gears or something like that that he did it at that particular juncture. But even one cell within the human body is infinitely more complex than the solar system, than the planets, at least in the solar system. Infinitely more complex than the city of New York, which is quite complex. You know, with the subways and everything happening, all these different departments, one cell in the body has more complexity than the city of New York. So, I mean, basically, this is called, information theory. By information theory, we can understand that the complexity of the material world is of such a degree that it cannot come, could not have come about by chance. Of course, our godmother Satyaputta, Prabhu proved this in his booklet, Mechanistic and Non-Mechanistic Science, which is actually quite a treatise on information theory. And in practically, you have to have a PhD in mathematics to understand what he's saying in this particular book. But this is the book I present to people if they think that evolution caused the manifestation of all life, which is ridiculous. To think that evolution, one living entity evolved into another. Even Darwin himself could not understand how the eye could have possibly evolved from a series of very, very small steps. I mean, so anyway, so Satyaputta proves mathematically, using modern mathematics, modern science, that basically there's someone who designed everything. And so that's called the natural proof of God, that God exists. However, let's talk about God's relationship or Krishna's relationship to this material creation. Of course, one point is made here in this particular verse that his relationship is that the material creation is like his shadow, Chaiva Bibharti Durga. That's a quote from the Brahma Samhita, that it's a reflection of the spiritual world, a reflection of the Lord's internal potency. We know the Lord has multifarious potencies. Svabhaviki jnana bala kriya cha purusha shaktir. It's interesting, this verse. Purusha shaktir vidaiva shuyate. This verse basically says the Lord has one potency, and the potency divides itself up into multifarious potencies. In other words, there's the Adi Shakti, and then that, the Shakti, Adi Shakti, for example, you have in the spiritual world, the Srimati Radharani expands as the queens in Dwarka. Queens of Dwarka expand as the Lakshmis, many, many Lakshmis, Lakshmi, Sasha, Sita, Sambrahma, Sejivanam, Govindamani, Purushottama, and the Lakshmis expand as Durga, the material creation. So it's very interesting. And so anyway, so the Lord has all these energies, but all the original energies, of course, is the spiritual energy, and the spiritual energy expands as the material energy. So therefore, the material world is a reflection. Of course, that's also described in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, with the famous banyan tree example being reflected on the river. That the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world, and the branches, the banyan tree, are down, and the roots are up. There's like upside down reflection. So, in other words, whatever is here is also there. But whatever is there in its original pure, pristine state. Whatever here is just a reflection, and it's basically backwards. Something like when we were young, we would watch this, read this comic book about the Bizarro World. Some of you may remember that was a, I guess it was a Superman comic or something like that, that everything was just complete, what happiness was distress, and it's the same thing. Actually, it's interesting, it's the same thing. Happiness in the material world is distress, as described by Krishna in the Gita, because the happiness that you have in the Gita is actually coming from the modes of nature. Of course, the modes of nature, the happiness, just bewilders one. The mode of goodness, it increases one's attachment to the material world. And the mode of passion, the happiness, is like pleasure in the beginning and pain at the end, or poison at the end. And in ignorance, it's just like misery all the time. But in the spiritual world, the happiness is, kevalananda kanda, is always increasing. So, of course, we have this typical saying, Sat Chit Ananda, referring to the spiritual world. There was even a Swami by that name in the 1960s, Swami Sat Chit Ananda. So Sat, Sat means eternal, Chit means knowledge, and Ananda means, of course, bliss, or unlimited happiness, Ananda, Ananda. So in the material world, you have the exact opposite, which is Asat, Achit, and Nirananda, which basically means temporary, ignorant, and misery. And of course, this is the nature of this world. So, but still, the variety in this world exists because there's variety in the spiritual world. And there's the five rasas in this world, or the five exchanges in this world, like you have Shantaras, Dasharas, Sakyaras, Vatsalya, Asamaturya Ras, and then also in the spiritual world, you got those five things. You got anger in this material world, you got anger in the spiritual world. You got choking in the material world, you got choking in the spiritual world. So everything is there in the spiritual world. It's not less, it's actually more. So, and anyway, so the relationship of the material world, let's go further into philosophy here. The relationship of the material world with Krishna is that it is his energy. And in one sense, of course, if we go along with Lord Chaitanya's explanation, which is our philosophy, that it is one and different from the Lord simultaneously. In other words, it is not, as many people think, inherently bad. Like sometimes people say, even in the Hare Krishna movement, they say the material world is bad. It's not bad. It actually has a purpose. If you understand teleologically the purpose, it's not bad. And by using it in Krishna's service, by using the material world in Krishna's service, it actually becomes good. That's called Yukta Vairagya. And a devotee should always see, as Prabhupada said, one time he was sitting on a chair. He said, this chair is Krishna. Of course, he didn't mean that the chair is the spiritual body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But because it's Krishna's energy, it's Krishna. So it's inherently, the material world is inherently sacred because it belongs to Krishna. It's Krishna's property. So most of the people in the modern world, they consider, I mean, even the religious people, they consider the material world not to be sacred. They consider the material world to be something Of course, they try to enjoy it, but they don't, certainly don't consider it sacred. They consider it of the devil or whatever. And this, of course, is extreme duality. It's not our philosophy. Actually, Sripad Madhvacharya, he was more of a dualist than we are. He had, he holds up his fingers like that, the duality. And but we are actually a Chinchu Beda Beda Tattva. We don't consider that the material energy is God in every sense of the word, but it is the emanation or the energy of God or the transformation. It's called Parinama, technically, if you want to use a Sanskrit word. Vivarta means illusion, which is what we are in. And the devotees are actually in spiritual illusion, forgetting that Krishna is God. There's Jagannanda Pandit. He composes a book, Prema Vivarta. That means the illusion of love, which is actually interesting. And in the material world, of course, there's also an illusion of love. People fall in love. But in the spiritual world, there's an illusion of love of Krishna, that one forgets that Krishna is God. So Prema Vivarta. So this material world, we're not advocates of duality, of extreme duality, nor are we advocates of extreme unity, Advaita. We're Dvaita, Advaita, or Vishishta Dvaita, like Ramanujacharya's philosophy. So we consider the material world to be extremely sacred, and it's not something that we can exploit for our own enjoyment. And actually, I was just actually listening to a class of Sridhar Nandamar. She was making this point very, very nicely. He said that when people have this dualistic conception, that God is inherently, completely, 100% different than his energy, it leads to ecological disasters because people, they just think they can do any damn thing with the material world, exploit the world. Of course, Prabhupada talked about Hiranyaksha and how he disturbed the earth, and the earth fell down with the Garbhodak Ocean. Prabhupada said the modern explorers, the modern oil drillers and everything like that, disturbing the rotation or the place of the earth. I guess it's like life airs. In the body, if we disturb our life airs, we get sick. And if you disturb the life airs of the earth, too much, then the earth can fall out of the Garbhodak Ocean. Of course, I don't think that's going to happen soon, hopefully. But Prabhupada compared the two, like to Hiranyaksha, to the modern people who are drilling in the earth. So there's actually no sense that the earth is sacred or that life is sacred, what to speak of the earth, that other people's life or animals' life is sacred. So the ideas that people have, let's say in modern day so-called Christianity, is that they can exploit the earth, exploit the earth's resources, kill any living entity. It doesn't really matter. But in the Vedic conception, that is when you have Vedic tradition, before they would even build a building or excavate land, they would do something called Bhumi Puja. I don't know if any of you have heard of Bhumi Puja. The word puja actually means to offer respect. That's another interesting point. That sometimes we think puja is directly translated as worship, but it actually means to offer respect. Like you offer respect to your parents, you offer respect to superiors. Of course, Krishna says those are the austerities of the body that he recommends in the Gita. So this is Bhumi Puja. I remember even sometimes with some of my friends who were building hotels, they asked me to do the Bhumi Puja for the hotel, like Prakash Desai and around the Charlotte area, Monroe. He had me come for all the, and the hotel is quite successful, and he attributes his success to the Bhumi Puja that I did. So, I mean, that's one instance. And another thing is that in the traditional Vedic society, and even in traditional, like, American Indian society, when they had to cut down a tree, they had the understanding that the tree was a living entity. And of course, you can see that in that movie Avatar too. That the tree is a living entity, and when you're cutting down a tree, you're disturbing a whole community. I mean, one time when we were clearing the land here, Nuku'alofa in the front where the greenhouse is right now, I cut down a tree and a flying squirrel came out of it. Yeah, it was a flying squirrel. Went right in. So I was understanding that I was disturbing his habitat. And so many, I mean, other creatures too. It's not just that the squirrels or the tree, the birds lay their eggs in the nest in the tree. There's ants in the tree. And these are all sacred. It's just like everything in the material world, the people in the modern world has become profane. You know what I'm saying? Profane. In other words, they can do whatever they want, cut down any trees they want. I mean, I was with Prabhupada one time in Dallas, Texas. Prabhupada arrived there at the temple. And the devotees had cut down a really nice oak tree. And I mean, it was. I'm not saying that we shouldn't cut down trees. I mean, Prabhupada actually said that certain trees they can be cut down and to be used for wood and things like that. But in India, there's actually people cutting down trees making firewood. So you see that India is becoming deforested very quickly, and that's one of the causes of the encroaching desert, the Rajasthani desert that's encroaching on Braj right now. I mean, Rajasthan is right on the border of Braj. Like if you're going around Govardhan, then you actually go into Rajasthan at part of Govardhan. What? Yeah, you go in. How do you know? Because your phone says, "Welcome to Rajasthan." Welcome to Rajasthan, because it's right on the border. It's right on the border. You cross the border, and you're in Rajasthan there. And so the desert is actually encroaching on Vrindavan, and the weather is getting harsher and harsher all the time because they're cutting down the trees. That's called desertification, where a desert actually get a land that was previously fertile becomes a desert because of erosion, because of other things. So, I mean, this is happening, of course, in India and so many other places. So there's not this there's not this reverence for matter. It's not just like matter, it's God's energy. And one interesting thing is that God can appear in his energy if he wants to. I mean, even in spiritual form, like we have the deities. I mean, you have the, of course, the Christians, all the Abrahamic religions, they're against deities because they don't really understand that God, it's God's energy. God can appear in his energy if he wants. It's not inherently evil, material, profane like that, but Krishna appears. He can appear in marble. I mean, he can appear in a book, and even in the Bible, this really goes against their philosophy. You have God appearing in a burning bush. There's God in a burning bush, and he's speaking to Moses. And he's saying, "Set my people free." And so you have so many instances of that, whereas the people in the Christian world, generally the Abrahamic religions, not just Christianity, we're talking about the Islamic tradition, also the Jewish tradition, they're decrying deity worship. I remember, sometimes we're speaking to people about what happened when they joined the movement. When I joined the movement, it was really hard to accept that there were deities because I was brought up in a Jewish tradition. I was just thinking, oh my God. Well, it is God. He is God. But anyway, I was thinking, let me join a temple where there's no deities. Because it was easier from that mindset, the conditioning that I had. Whereas you speak to Catholics who don't have so much of that same conditioning, it's easier, especially in South America and other countries, I guess even the Philippines. They have, with their Catholic countries, they actually have Murtis, deities of Mary and Jesus, and in the Eastern European church, Eastern Rite church. They have icons of the saints that they worship. They actually do incense. In some of the churches, they actually offer incense in a little swinging chalice like that. And they also have, what to speak of the Eucharist, where they have the transformation. Of course, all the churches have that. It's interesting that where the wine and the crackers become transformed in the body and blood of Jesus Christ, which is really interesting. I mean, blood. I don't even want to think about that. So, but in any case, they do have some hint that things can be transformed, but they haven't really developed any sort of philosophical understanding. So that's why they can't understand deities. And of course, it's probably a good thing that people from a primitive culture don't accept deities, because then that it would be like a golden calf that they worshipped in the Bible. You remember that story, the golden calf, and then God became angry. Moses dropped the first version of the Ten Commandments, 0-1. And then he had to come back, you know, Ten Commandments, 0-2, version 2. So he had to come back and with another version of the Ten Commandments. And because he became angry with them, he couldn't see the promised land. There's a whole story in the Bible. So it's probably a good thing, because they would just like worship so many material things as God. So we understand the difference. You know, we don't worship this chair. We don't worship, you know, the cartels. I mean, the cartels are spiritual when they're used for Krishna, but we don't worship them. We use everything in Krishna's service. It becomes transformed by using it in Krishna's service. And specifically the deities, even though we all know the deities are made of stone or wood, even in the mind, you can have a deity made, a mental deity, when you picture Krishna, or metal, or all these other different substances. So we understand that this, Krishna's energy, which is sacred, which is transformed, and therefore it becomes directly Sakshat Brajendra Nandana, directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's manifest before. So this is the benefit of being a member of the Krishna Conscious Movement, connected with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his understanding that the material energy is one and different from Krishna simultaneously, and it's Krishna's energy. And Krishna, another example Prabhupada gave, and I'm going to end with this, is that Krishna is like an expert electrician who can transform let's say electricity from heating to cooling, and then cooling to heating, just like we have this unit up there. It can either cool or can heat, depending upon the setting. So it's an expert, not necessarily electrician, but an expert designer who was able to, you know, electrical engineer, mechanical engineer, electrical, who was able to design that. So the same energy is manifest in two different ways. So that's the same thing with Krishna's. Material energy can be manifest as spiritual. And just like with a pure devotee, you're not supposed to consider his body to be material. Even though we know it has physical components, you know, there's blood, there's skin, there's, you know, eyes, there's hair, and all these other things. But because it's used in Krishna's service, then it's spiritualized, or any of the remnants of the pure devotee. Just like if you go to Vrindavan, you'll see in Srila Prabhupada's quarters that there are so many the implements that Prabhupada used, the bowl that Prabhupada used, the hair cutting machine, he actually used like a little buzzer, a hair cutting machine that Prabhupada used, the shoes that Prabhupada wore, all these things are worshipped and respected by the devotees. So this is the understanding that we have of Krishna's energies, that they're under Krishna's direction, they can be controlled by Krishna, and inherently they're sacred. So when we're dealing, I mean, Prabhupada was like that too. When he would go for a walk, he would see sometimes someone's water was running or something like that. He would tell the devotees to turn it off, because it was understood, even if it wasn't the temple's water, he would understand this is Krishna's energy. Or Prabhupada would get upset if someone left the fan on in his room when he wasn't in the room, or the lights on in the room when he wasn't in the room. So Prabhupada had this understanding that Krishna's energy is inherently sacred. So we are the best ecologists, you know, people interested in the ecology of the earth, protecting the earth, like that, and also protecting animals, which are sacred. Everything's sacred. Devotees should see like that. We should sarvam. Okay. So we have about 2 more minutes. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
Yesterday, I asked you about why we're so attached to not having any change, and you related it to the spiritual world. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And then, but then I was thinking in contrast to that, what you were talking about, like the atheists, and how it seems like if we are so attached to wanting, on a subconscious level, attached to life of no change, yet there's this other contradiction within us of not wanting God to exist and have that spiritual world where there's consistency and safety and all those things, like in the same.
Not wanting God to exist.
Well, yeah, or just not wanting to be responsible or accept the fact that God exists.
Yeah.
And so it just seems like a contradiction in consciousness on one side. To, not want change, to want that safety, and that's related to the spiritual world. And I guess because you don't have the knowledge of the spiritual world, but still it seems like there's this whole fight to deny God, yet
Yeah.
that's what you really want. It's just weird.
Well, the no change, it's interesting, no change philosophy. The no change we have is that Krishna's always taking care of us. Krishna's maintaining us. Krishna's protecting us. Krishna's always with us. And the material world is always changing. Everything's changing. And the material, we mentioned that yesterday as part of class, and that creates a little insecurity. That the material world is always changing. But if we're looking internally with our relationship with Krishna, that's always there. That's always our security, our stability. But the material world, our interaction with the material world will give us no stability, no security. Deny what? Because we want to be the controller. We want to be the
We
enjoyer.
don't want any, we want to be the only change that we want
Yeah, we think that we're self-made men or women, and we're the enjoyer, the proprietor, the controller, and we still don't want any change. But it's not possible because we can't. On that level, everything changes. What is that? Yeah, I don't want to grow old. I can't even change things going on with my body. But to speak of changing the world, being God. Okay, on that happy note, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. I want to mention everybody, Jitendra, Neelachal, Sital, Nitai Prem, Uddhava, Kishori, and Krishnanandini. Nice group of people today. Prabhupada ki jai. Radha Goloka Nanda ki jai.